Welcome, guys. Today is a bit different. We're having a guest host filling in, but a guest you should be well acquainted with, since he was on not too long ago. Salman interviewed me recently for a project about political organizing, and I got a chance to speak about some general principles that don't necessarily fit in with any specific local Jewish subject. I go into detail about some organizing I've personally been involved with, the Cafe Bund project in Krakow, Poland, which Salman visited, albeit at a very early stage. You can follow us on Instagram at cafe.bund. We've actually got an open fundraising campaign for a Bundist zine we've been working on for a long time. A link is in the description, and we'll be back with your next Jewish Diasporist episode in 2 weeks. Brüder und Schwester von Arbeit und Neut, alle, was seinen zu seht und zu spreit, zusammen, zusammen, die von sie ist greit, sie flattert von Zorn, von Blut ist sie reut, a Schwue, a Schwue, a Fleb und Teut.
For this project, I'm really excited to be speaking with a friend and extremely talented organizer, Zach Smirin, all the way from Krakow in Poland. His many accomplishments include an MPhil in European History from the University of Oxford, extensive work on the National Committee of the Jewish Socialist Group in the United Kingdom, writing articles about Jewish and Polish politics for publications like The Forward and The Jewish Socialist, and co-hosting the Jewish Diasporist podcast. He's recently been the driving force behind the creation of a very unique organizing space called Cafe Bund, located in Kazimierz, the historic Jewish center of Krakow. Today we're going to be talking about Cafe Bund, and through that discussion, I'm hoping to learn about social movements more broadly by figuring out what drove the creation of the space, who's involved and why, what they've been getting up to, and what might be unique about it. So Zach, thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here. Yeah, just one little correction, if I may. In terms of like organizing for Cafe Bund, I've been involved in it since the project has been beginning. But I wouldn't say I'm the driving force. I'm one of the organizers of it. And actually, the second thing, it's very close to Kazimierz in the Jewish quarter. But it's actually not, it's just across the river. And it's a place called Podgórze, which means like under hill. It's quite a unique place in Krakow, a lot of working class history and as such.
Oh, very interesting. Thank you. Circle back to that and kind of the differences in terms of local area a little bit later on. But first of all, could you maybe briefly introduce yourself and talk a little bit about your background, where you're from, your Jewish community, how you got involved in political organizing, and then we can get more into Cafe Bund.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I come from a mixed family. My mother's side is Polish and not Jewish. My father's side comes from Poland and is Jewish, Ashkenazi Jewish, but he actually himself was a third generation immigrant, if you can even say it as such. Comes from an immigrant family in East London. My parents met in Paris. I moved to Poland when I was five. I was born in Paris. I grew up there. I wasn't born, but I consider myself, if there is a place where I feel at home, that is Poland, at least for now. And yeah, I went to study in the UK. I went to Warwick, first my undergraduate in history and politics, ditched the politics, which I thought was a very good idea, personally. That's only my opinion. Focused on history and then modern European history in Oxford. Through that time, I've been involved in various Jewish, Polish, left-wing, sometimes all of the above, organizing spaces. I can't say that I've, you know, had much experience, but I've been in a few different organizations. I have some thoughts about what works, what doesn't work, and what interests me and what I think needs to be done to make the world a better place.
Yeah, absolutely. So I definitely want to hear more about kind of your thoughts on what makes organizing work, but your project is called Cafe Bund, and I know the history of the Bund isn't super well known in the United States. So before we get into that, I wanted to add a little bit of context. The General Jewish Labor Bund, or the Bund for short, was a Jewish political movement, especially strong in Central and Eastern Europe and Poland in particular, during the late 19th and early 20th century. It centered on Jewishness or Yiddishkeit, socialism or Deutschkeit, this idea of like here-ness and being grounded in the community where you are. They were anti-assimilationists and opposed to territorial nationalism, including Zionism, preferring a type of non-territorial autonomism. Could you maybe talk a little bit about how the Bund came to be a part of your political organizing in the modern day?
So, I've been interested in progressive politics from quite a young age. From a young age in Poland, I knew that I wasn't a conservative. That was something that my parents had at least a significant role in playing. And for me, the real first, I remember earlier being quite interested in environmental issues, as a lot of people our generation are. But the real sort of political movement that became very inspirational for me was Bernie Sanders's political campaign, the first one. And so I remember just some of the ways in which he outlined things, staying close on message, saying what you support, what you want, was very inspiring. It was inspiring for millions of Americans, and it was inspiring for people outside the world like me, who followed his political campaign much more than they followed politics, and than I followed politics in Poland at that time. I remember being 14, 15 years old, and staying up to watch at 2 a.m. to watch the primary results from Kentucky or something like that, and seeing that he's beating Clinton and that he has a good chance of defeating Trump, which probably didn't reflect very well for me waking up the next day to go to school. But in many ways, it was my first sort of like political experience. My dad was quite involved politically when he was younger. He became quite active in Jewish left-wing politics in Britain. Some of the earliest organizing, anti-occupation organizing, when it came to the Israeli invasion of Lebanon in 1982, which, now the whole circle has gone round. I think that's the expression. And so he was always quite interested in Yiddish as well, because I grew up without really having a It's not that I didn't have a Jewish community, because when I grew up in Krakow, I went to the Reform community. I had my bar mitzvah. I went through like the Beit Din process, so I officially got a giur, a Reform giur, for what it's worth in certain spaces. And so I was in a Jewish community, but I wasn't in a Jewish community of my peers. I didn't have Jewish people my age who were also involved in the community. That's not to say that I didn't know any Jewish people my age, but not someone who was active in that sense. That only came later when I went to study in Britain. So I always knew that I was connected to that Yiddish world. My father's a Yiddishist, a Yiddish translator, and he himself knew about the Bund. And when I came to learn more about it was quite clear that a lot of his organizing and activism, like in the 1970s and 80s, was quite connected to that. But it wasn't something that for me, it was something that I considered somewhat of a historical curiosity, and not something that was particularly applicable to our circumstances in modern 21st century Poland or Europe or anywhere that for that matter. And so it was only when I became more involved in Palestine solidarity organizing. I had a teacher. My teacher in high school was very interested in the Middle East. He specialized in it, and he also volunteered there to work. And a year later, in him, he wanted to work in Ramallah. And then a year later, he took us on a 6 day trip of where we stayed overnight in places like Nazareth and Nablus and Bethlehem. Visited many of the other places where I ended up reading more and more. That I l started learning more about the situation in Israel Palestine, and it outraged me in many ways. And I think it should outrage anyone who believes in democracy and equality and and such. And so I got involved in Palestine solidarity spaces quite openly and vocally when I came to university first. And I also remember that I wasn't initially involved with my Jewish, with the local Jewish community, which I can't say that it was, you know, the primary thing that I wanted to do at the time, but it's something that I at least wanted to explore, to meet Jewish people my age, which I never had the possibility to do before. And only, and the first experience that I had was with very with very white right wing Zionist campus ambassadors who were then in the leadership of the then Jewish Israeli society at the University of Warwick. And I felt that it wasn't a space for me. And only afterwards, after finding more people that were more center left, at least in my politics, that I felt it would be more interesting to be involved and see what it's like. And well, at the beginning, I felt that my place there is important because I wanted to be a person there who shows that you can combine being an active and open member of the Jewish community and also a Palestine solidarity organizer. Over time, I started thinking more and more about a lot of the issues that I saw within the Jewish community spaces, or within this particular Jewish community space, which was a medium-sized Jewish society in Britain. For context, that's like that would be like a Hillel at a campus in America with about 20 people that come to a Friday night dinner or service, because that was during the COVID years, so we had to do just religious events. But what became interesting to me was that in many places, this was what I would call now more of a space for Jews than a Jewish space, a social space, that is, where you can, where there isn't much in terms of religious observance. Even though there were services, that was basically the thing that we could do, so people did them. But once you could bring back, you know, just Friday night dinners, Warwick wasn't a place where you could particularly, it wasn't, there wasn't enough Orthodox frum students to be able to properly observe and such, to conduct prayers every day. We didn't have a rabbi on site. And it wasn't a place even where, it wasn't a place certainly where there was interesting to me. It wasn't a place where, if you wanted to present this sort of like traditional Zionist ideological perspective of preparing for Aliyah or learning Hebrew or training in that way, that wasn't the thing that interested people the most. You couldn't learn Hebrew with it through the Jewish student space if you wanted to, or it wasn't helped with it in any way. And it certainly wasn't a place for any sort of real Jewish cultural organizing. I'm talking about things like literature, art, music, theater, fashion, languages, whether it be Hebrew or Yiddish or others. And so this started to interest me a lot, alongside a lot of like practical things that I saw that I think could be done better. And so through that perspective, I mean, I started thinking more of it in the sense of the reason as to why people have this sort of attachment to Israel that they sometimes can't exactly explain it within the community as a sense of like safety and such, is because it's seen as the vibrancy where Jewish life and Jewish self-determination is taking place, which is not only is it not able to happen to that same extent in the diaspora at this moment, when I'm talking about like cultural vibrancy and such, it's also not possible or not imagined as possible. And so in this way, if you look at like music, for example, a lot of Jewish students will have no idea about the diversity and vibrancy of Jewish music as far as it goes, and as much as it goes beyond like liturgical songs. And so the default Jewish music becomes like Israeli pop, right? That's what becomes the big thing. when it comes to like Jewish symbolism or exploring Jewish art, that's not particularly explored. And so it's that a lot of that symbolism is replaced with like the Israeli flag, right? When it comes to Jewish communal politics, a lot of the times Jewish communal politics like to be either Jewish communities are presented as apolitical, or the divisions within them are very petty, or they are very they're very animated by what's happening in Israel Palestine. Like you have Jewish communities where divides will be behind what the Netanyahu government has done recently. And so just looking through all the in those perspectives, as well as the perspectives that I saw from the Jewish left at the time, which basically relegated activism within the Jewish community to what I thought of it doing initially in the beginning as just what is the perspective on Israel Palestine in this thing? And also the interconnected thing of how do we talk about anti-Semitism or how do we act against anti-Semitism? And what for me became, quite important is to realize that when that is the only thing that you're involved with, when you choose Israel Palestine and anti-Semitism to define the two ways in which your Jewish communal politics takes place, you're actually reinforcing the idea that these are the two central parts of what Jewish identity is, right? You're reinforcing the idea that Israel is the centrality of Jewish life in modern day diaspora Jewish life. And the second one is that you're defining Jews by people that hate Jews, right? This isn't to say that Israel Palestine or anti-Semitism shouldn't be important parts of what Jewish community is and what Jewish left communal organizing should be, but it cannot be reduced to that. And I think reducing to that is quite shallow. And so all of these things, progressive politics, connection to Yiddish, interest in the diversity of Jewish culture and life, and also presenting yourself openly as Jewish. This was around the time when I started wearing a kippah openly, and such. All of these things pushed me in one particular direction, and I think that was the right direction. That was the direction that led to more exploration of what the Jewish Labor Bund was. What it means today to connect to that identity, and what it could possibly mean in the future to recognize that that we haven't reached the end of history. This isn't how it has to be, and that it doesn't have to be better, but it can be better. And so that's what led me towards further exploration of the Bund in all sorts of academic works and such.
Yeah, there's a lot of really interesting points there. One thing that stood out to me was that I had, in some ways, a very similar arc of just like initial politicization through, in part, the environmental movement and then the Bernie Sanders campaign, which it's interesting that it was also such a force in Europe, and then kind of Palestine solidarity and experience with Jewish communities and frustration with those spaces. In college. Also, just for context, Gior or Beis Din refer to like a formal conversion process within Judaism. So a lot of what you were talking about in terms of a cultural space and a place to be Jewish rather than a Jewish space and your frustrations with modern kind of Jewish communal politics, I feel like moves us quite naturally into the question of why you felt like a space like Café Bund specifically was important, what kind of motivated you to get started on that project. And also just briefly, obviously we'll go into more depth, but if you could describe briefly what Café Bund is.
So when it comes to Café Bund, it initially began, everything begins and then there's a beginning earlier, right? But when it came to my involvement with the attempts of Bundist organizing in Poland, it came from the fact that I was interested in doing Bund stuff wherever I was, wherever we live. And so I was in between Britain, where I was studying, and Poland, where my parents live, and where I was between term breaks. For American context, travel by flight from Britain to Poland is about 2 hours, so it's not particularly difficult to travel between them. So through various contacts or attempts and reaching out to people that I knew were either interested in Bundes stuff or with a Jewish background who might be potentially interested, I met another activist called Laurie. And Laurie has been a very important figure in various Polish left struggles. She's a labor organizer, she's an anti-fascist, both in all sorts of other areas in Warsaw and in Krakow. And and she is Jewish. And so we were in conversation and we thought, okay, I reached out to her first and sort of like asked, she knew obviously what the Bund was. I reached out, like, how do I see what is there to be done? And I laid out a few different points, and she said, okay, let's give it a try. Laurie is very active in the labor movement. She works as part of it, and one of the things that she's had connections with has been the very poor gastronomic conditions. So, like the restaurant sector, bars, cafes in Krakow, quite precarious work. Lowly paid, very quite seasonal as well, and so for a while they've had the idea, people that she's known in Krakow, to establish a cooperative or a cafe or space that was connected to a cooperative on cooperative principles, right? Certainly the idea of workplace democracy or decision collective decision making rather than having a boss that can hire you or fire you based on basically his will, and the one that controls the what is produced and how is it produced and such. And so we had this two-pronged approach. When we got more people involved and interested, of having on one hand a gastronomical cooperative, and on the other hand having a Bundist organizing social cultural space. These things are different; they have different purposes, but they shouldn't. And sometimes it's important not to mix them up. But this was the sort of starting point. Originally, we were looking for our own place to find a cooperative, but as you can look at the either you can either look at it as the disadvantages of cooperatives, or you can look at it as just a challenge that is placed on them by the current economic system. You need a lot of capital in order to just set up anything, and when it comes to grants and credit, not only do these things need navigation, you need to understand the system to do so. It's easier for traditionally owned businesses or traditionally structured businesses to receive grants and subsidies and tax breaks as such rather than cooperatives, at least in some cases. So instead of just leaving it deadlocked at that point, we decided that we would like to reach out to, actually, I don't want to say who reached out to who at this point. I don't remember exactly, but what happened was that a cooperative that's been active for many years in Krakow since 2013, called Ogniwo, which means like a chain link, decided that they wanted it that's operated as a cafe and a bookshop. It was formerly actually located in the Jewish quarter inside an old mikveh, an old a bathhouse, and then had to move across the river after the pandemic began. But they were looking for more people to help with running the cooperative, and so we joined as a few of us as a group, and we became members of the Ogniwo cooperative. We're taking on all rights and responsibilities of that, whilst also having our own project that we operated as part of that. We've been going for a few months, and we've been able to achieve quite a few good things in that time, although there's, of course, it's all very, very early phase. It's all a very, very early stage. That's why I also think it's important to say that we are a Bundist project. We are not a project of the Bund as such. Well, when it comes to that sort of stuff, that's also very much a work in progress, and I'm hoping that more can be achieved in the near future. but that is where we stand as of October 2024.
Yeah, so speaking of kind of the early stages and what you've been up to, I'm curious what kind of actions and activities Café Bund has been involved with thus far, and also in thinking about why you've been putting your emphasis on those type of events, those tactics, those services that you want to offer, in thinking about kind of some of those lessons learned you mentioned from previous organizing experiences.
Okay. So I wouldn't say that this was, oh, I wouldn't say that this was a Café Bund event or organized per such, but I and along with a few others in Krakow helped to coordinate the Jewish bloc at the Krakow May Day demonstration, May Day 2024, which I always struggle because by various metrics, you could define it differently. So, just to be safe, I would say that one of the first open Jewish open Jewish presences at a May Day demonstration in Poland in decades. I think that's the right way to say in terms of not just being there and not just being there as Jews, but also being part of the organizing effort of it. I gave a speech. Outlining some of the Jewish aspects of why May Day is important for Jews in Poland today. And it was also when we passed through the Jewish quarter, which was an amazing feeling for me to do. But that was something that helped kick off some of the connections that we had with Jewish leftists in neighboring countries, which I think is quite important in Poland to think about there. I can talk more about, the size of the Jewish community in Poland, how much stuff there is that we can do on the spot. But what's important is to have, connections with neighboring communities across borders. That's also something that was important for the Bund historically. Since then, we've organized several social events. We've had three Shabbos dinners. The first one was during the encampment, actually, in Krakow, and then two more were in Ogniwo, the cooperative. I think what's important for them is that they provide a communal space, very importantly, a Jewish space for people within the Jewish community who do not find the JCC or the Hillel or the Gmina, the Kehil, the like official Jewish communal organization, to be welcoming enough for them, partially because of politics. But on the other hand, I'm also quite wary. I'll just finish the thought there. So that provides that sort of communal space for them. We don't do too much religious stuff. We just basically do the Kiddush blessings as such. We're not a religious organization, although that is something that is possible to do in the future. I'm not ruling that out per se. There is what's also important is that we invite friends. We don't sort of check if you're Jewish or not at the door. It's so important for us that there is like a Jewish presence there, that we are active as such. But it's but also something that I think is worthwhile is just for mainly people from different leftist organizing or activist spaces to have a space where they can come every Friday night. Well, every now and then for Friday night, just to have dinner with other people. People bring, we coordinate, certain people take it upon themselves to bring a certain meal, but we try to spread it out as much so that people don't have to, there's no sort of purchase to buy stuff yet. It's just if you can help out, then you can do it. And so that's important. It's important to have communal spaces. As such, at the same time, I think it's important to have somewhat of a barrier between them, at least sort of idea of a barrier, that our aim is not just to be a space where we can have like-minded people who are already converted to our cause, however we might want to imagine it, to just hang out and as such. That's important, but that's not enough to say. You know, it's not enough just to create a bunker against the world as we imagine it. No matter how nice of a bunker it is, no matter how many people can fit into it, which sometimes is not that many, it's important that we go out and we try and talk to people. We try to convince people of what we believe and what we want and what can be done about it. And so we've also hosted several educational events. One of our organizers, Katya, who's from studies at Michigan, gave a talk about anti-Zionist Jewish organizing in on American campuses. We've organized the fundraisers for Gaza, or specifically it was a musical event about Arab futurist music. And yeah, right now we've released infographics and information on recent events, encourage people to come to demonstrations. Some of the people from our group have organized demonstrations themselves. We've also taking advantage of our, oh, I'll mention before that as well, when it comes to the gastronomy stuff, several people from our groups, such as Roman in particular, who's a great cook, or Bartek as well, I'm giving them a shout out here, have organized the food for their various concerts. So, for example, there was an Israeli punk band that came to Krakow recently, and we provided the food for them. I don't want to say that I provided. I guarded the food a lot of time and helped with the finances of it. But yeah, we've got a lot of people with various different experiences. I don't think it's a question of pigeonholing people into various. You don't want to, you know, have a group where one guy is the intellectual, one guy is like the manual worker as such. But I think it's relevant to have people that come from different backgrounds that can learn from each other and that can share the burden of organizing in that way. What else? We have a library. At this point, it counts about 200, almost 200 books. There's a special
Wow.
section there on the Bund or Bundist areas, but also on Jewish life in Poland, mainly today, some historical stuff, and then a collection of various Jewish periodicals and publications from America, Britain, Canada, Belgium, Australia. We're working on our own zine, still in the works. Australia, I've mentioned. But what this is basically a modern Jewish left periodicals library, which is open. Ognivo as a cooperative is open Monday to Saturday, 5 to 10 p.m. And so anyone who wants to learn more about the Bund, can in Krakow can just come in and have a look. We don't let people take books out because some of them are too precious. But there's just having that as a space. It's not even a question of people reading everything that's in there because most a lot of people just don't read it. But the fact of having a library, of having a repository of information for your movement to, it's a source of pride and collection and organizing. It's not just a bunch of books lying around. They're organized in a semi-proper way on the shelf. And we've got an online catalog so people can see what is in there. And we keep track of who has donated things to us. I have to thank two people in particular here, Molly Crabapple and Irena Klepfisch, who have both donated books to us from New York. And there are others who have donated and others who will donate. So hopefully you'll continue growing. And this has already inspired quite a bit more conversation in Krakow. About reactivating a Jewish library as such, and a left wing or a leftist library that is open to the public where the books are organized in a proper way. So I'm happy that this is something that's also driving organizing spaces. There's a lot more to come. There are a lot of areas when it comes to really the Bundist principle of Deutschkeit and Hearness about what can be done. When it comes to the local Jewish communal life in Krakow. But there's not much I can speak in terms of just concrete ideas. I can talk about areas of housing, of green areas, of car culture, and such, in Krakow and the Jewish quarter, and over tourism as well. That's becoming more and more of a discussion point in many cities in Europe. But these are all works in progress. So I can touch on them a little bit if you want, but I wouldn't say that that's something that we've done yet. That's something that we're thinking about doing and have ideas. But there are all kinds of ideas that you could have.
So in a minute, I do want to talk a little bit more about that local context and also contrasting that a little with the importance of international connections you brought up earlier. But before we do, I wanted to ask, you mentioned when you were talking about kind of how you got involved with politics that you'd been involved in a lot of organizations, a lot of movements, and you'd noticed some things you felt like really worked and some things you felt like didn't. And I was curious if you could touch a little more on that and how you've applied those experiences to your work with Café Bund.
Okay, so there's a few different areas that I can take this. I'll try to do so without stirring up too much drama. Well, no, not drama per se, but that's a good point to start. Right after I take a sip. So one thing that's particularly important, I think, is I'm about to drop a hot take. Something that's quite important is to say that organizing spaces and social spaces work in different ways. If you want to use a Polish calque, Polish expressions, they are ruled by different laws, so to speak. What that means is that you should not try and there are people, we're all different. We can all annoy each other. We can all find certain things annoying about other people. We can find them different or strange. As long as I think there are obviously ways in which, respect and also when it comes to personal identities or immutable characteristics, if you want to use a bigger word, if those are things that are being are not respected, then that's absolutely a reason towards distancing someone from the group, or your collective, your organization. What's less so is that you don't have to be friends with someone to work together well. It helps sometimes. Sometimes it gets in the way, actually. You can see cliquiness is certainly a thing that can happen towards groups that you end up being biased towards someone's actions you don't notice stuff. Another thing that's particularly important is what do you support? What do you want? What are you for? It's very easy to oppose something, right? It's very easy to say that's the system is bad. That the elites are bad, that what my country is doing is bad. It's very easy to say what you don't like. It's very easy to negate. It's much easier. It's much easier than actually thinking of what is your vision, right? This is something that's particularly important when it comes to Israel-Palestine. I think that if you look at, and I speak this as someone who identifies himself for years, have identified myself as someone who stands in as with the Palestine Solidarity Movement. I'm not ashamed to wear a keffiyeh or a Palestine flag. I'm not this I don't go to demonstrations or participate as such because I like the people who go there, but because I think the situation is important, especially now, for the last year and with what the Israeli army has been doing, especially in northern Gaza and Jabalia camp and the hospital in Deir al-Balah, for example. That doesn't distract from the fact that Palestine solidarity organizing, in at least in the British context that I'm most familiar with, but also with YC in America and now in Poland. I'm not even going to get started on Austria and the situation here, but it's overwhelmingly negative in its image, in its rhetoric. Well, I don't mean negative and that the situation is bad, that's obvious, but negative in the sense of we do not like this. We do like it's like basically anti-Israel, anti-apartheid, anti-occupation, anti-genocide, anti-war, anti-Zionism, anti, right? And so what's important is that you have you people can arrive at opposition to something like opposition to Israel or opposition to capitalism from many different reasons, from many different avenues, right? There are very good reasons to be what we may be described as anti-Zionism, and there are very bad reasons as to why one can be described opposed to Zionism, right? And when that's the sole unifying purpose of it, and you don't really interrogate the reason as to why people don't like it, you end up having like strange bedfellows sometimes. And when an organization is under pressure, like when it's organizing demonstrations or regularly or in fights with police and campus and stuff, that tends to consolidate the group, and there isn't the possibility of discussing having important conversations about how the organization is structured internally, especially when a lot of the criticism that you can see will come from people that do not like the movement or do not identify the movement as such. Another thing that's important is the question of structure, right? It's I don't want to sound like some sort of like anti-anarchist know-it-all Trotskyist, right? Because this is like a common thing of like, oh, we would all like structurelessness or to such, but actually you need like a government dictatorship and censorship and stuff. That's not what I'm talking about. And I think there are important lessons to be learned from the Bund, that there is such a thing as the tyranny of structurelessness, right? There are important things that need to be done for an organization to work well. And there are some jobs that people do not necessarily like to do. They're not the most, catchy, eye-catching ones, the ones that bring the most glory, but the ones that are absolutely crucial to for stuff getting done. And there are ways to get around this, but without, having people bogged down and like a hierarchy developing locally, which doesn't. I don't think that a lack of structure should mean a lack. Sorry, I don't think that a lack of hierarchy should mean a lack of structure. And I think that a lot of anarchists, in particular, I choose to not identify as an anarchist because anarchists can be very annoying about certain things and certain labels. But then that's everyone, right? So that's nothing in particular. But structure is particularly important, especially if we're talking about physical spaces. Then there are only so many ways in which you can have your own physical space, right? You can, have things stored at someone's house, which I don't think is a particularly good idea for organizing in general. It's I think that creates quite a bit of a personal burden and risk as well. I think you can have spaces that are open to the public, spaces that are not. You can try and get around finding a place on a squat, right? You can squat in some place. You can get a grant and you can rent out an office space, right? You can collect money on your own. These are all different ways of finding, as physical space has its own thing that's in and of itself, I think is important basically to any organizing initiative. And in order to have a physical space, you need to have money. But whatever way in which you get it, and there are different ways of getting money, right? You can be dependent on grants. You can rob banks. That's what the Bolsheviks did, right? The PPS in Poland as well. You can collect dues on your own. You can none of these are particularly, I would say, inherently better than any of the others, but you need to come up with something. And when it comes question to when it's a question of organizing money, you need to have good bookkeeping and you need to have good structure. And the final thing I'll say about organizing and structure is welfare. there are complaints about that have become more often about political correctness and cancel culture and all these. They're just, I think in many ways they're just repackaged terms for basic human social interactions that are not particularly common right now. Although social media does change things, and maybe actually the final point I'll make is on social media and just online space as well. But when it comes to welfare, there are you should have a standardized and impartial as much as it is possible system of welfare within your group. What's even better is if you have various different groups and collectives that can agree on sharing a combined welfare system, right? And having a way of channeling disagreements within the group, which are always going to arise. And so in I think when it comes to the Bund, historically, there are two nice lessons that can be taken. First of all, the Bund did not recognize the Bund never practiced democratic centralism as an organizing thing. It never came up with this idea of, if we have to discuss everything internally, but once that's discussed, we have to stick to it, right? And which has itself a lot of potential for abuse and division. The Bund viewed that the exploration of various policy positions and ideas is something that can be done in the public, and it supported the publishing of majority and minority resolutions within organizations. One of the minority fractions in the Bund in the interwar period was able to openly publish its own newspaper, and it was called Against the Current, Gegenstrom, to criticize the leadership, right? Another thing that's really interesting, and this is something that you can see in if you read the book by Emanuel Novogrutsky on the Bund, that is that the Bund and the communists very often did not see eye to eye, to say the least. And on one occasion, they basically organized a trial. The Bund accused the communists of, or one of the other, it was a libel case. And they organized a trial where both sides provided a judge and they decided on an impartial judge. And it just held like a court decision, right? Which, in many ways, for mo I think for many left wing or groups or collectives, creating something like that in the public space, bear in mind the communists were illegal in Poland. So this was an additional challenge for like getting stuff like this done. But it was, they found ways to do it then. And they and but today, in many ways, that sounds almost almost inconceivable, I would say. And so and also I would say, in terms of organizing, absolutely beware of technology. I don't want to sound like a complete Luddite, but especially social media, instant communicators, and online storage. These are all things that have amazing potential for organizing. Right, you can reach hundreds of thousands, millions of people, but you do also don't want to be an organization that has tens of thousands of followers on Instagram or Twitter or wherever, and then you can't get 10 people to a physical meeting. You don't want to be able to store everything on a Google Drive that has a terabyte of space, while also not being able to find crucial documents or having to read everything from a PDF file, right? Sometimes it's good to read a physical copy of a book or a organizing document or an agreement or whatever, right? You want to be able to reach people with your messages, with message, but also beware that when it comes, especially when it comes to disputes, and divisions within an organization, basically nothing is worse than something like a messenger chat or a signal chat or a group for discussing nuance, complicated decisions, when especially in times of stress and tension, right? That those are the same thing. But you don't want that messenger, and when you see messages on messenger, the way in which most people won't read them, the people that do read them will You know, tone indicators are not understood in the same way by everyone. This can, you know, it creates a lot of unproductive dialogue, and sometimes it's just impossible to catch up and actually sort things out, right? That's why, you know, physical spaces, you know, where you can have meetings, you can store, you know, documents and such, you can have conversations, you can have debate. This is why they are important. That doesn't mean that that solves everything. And of course, there are ways in which people might not be able to access from them, to access them, but you cannot get your way around having that physical space, that's secure, right? These all require nuance in approach, but that is what that without that, it's I think it's very, very difficult, I think, and leads to a lot of unnecessary wasted time and energy.
Yeah, that was a really, really insightful answer. So now I want to move over a little bit to talking about that kind of international, local thing that's come up a few times now. So in addition to Ognivo, I know you've helped facilitate international connections between organizations from the Bund in Melbourne to the Jewish Socialist Group in the UK to, with, for example, that May Day demonstration, Jewish Voice of Solidarity in Czechia. At the same time, you've talked about there are things that are very specific to your local context in Krakow. So, could you talk a little bit more about kind of where internationalism and here-ness complement each other or are conflicting forces in your organizing?
I wouldn't say they're conflicting forces. They're just areas in which you get involved through one or the other. There's a nice saying in Polish: "Myśl globalnie, działaj lokalnie." Think globally, act locally. You can also act globally, of course. And I was just slacking off, you know, social media and instant communication, but the fact is, and specifically when it comes to Bundist organizing, we now have possibilities for communication and organizing that were basically impossible to imagine 20 years ago, right? You're not you weren't able to think in these sorts of ways. Oh, I'm going to let's work on a document together, right? Let's talk for hours with video camera, with sharing our documents and editing such. This is all new, and this provides incredible possibilities for work, right? And even when it comes to physical space, people travel more than before, too much in certain areas. Oh, not in certain areas, but in certain ways. And you know, if we're going to talk about over tourism, I'll get to that in a moment. But this is all. You know, when I was traveling from Britain to England for my studies, I was able. I quite often traveled with lots of, well, not completely, but I traveled with books, I traveled with publications from one to the other, and there are ways in which organizations can, apart from anything, save a lot of money from having people and who they know travel regularly. To each other from different locations to be able to pass things along and give things out because to have like we in Krakow have physical zines and books, one book for now from Melbourne, from Australia on the other side of the planet, right? That takes 2 months to travel by post if we're lucky. But there will be people occasionally who are traveling by plane and they're able to take things that otherwise would be, you know, it's not even worth giving by post. So something that if you are engaged in, especially if you're engaged in Bundist or other sort of transnational organizing, I strongly recommend that sort of stuff. A lot apart from that, I mean, a lot of organizing shares similar principles. That you have various, especially if you're looking at it from a socialist perspective, you can know that there are people around the world who are organizing in similar areas that you're defying class, you defy not class barriers, you're defying national barriers. It means that you can bring forward more and more ideas and perspectives that otherwise might be locked away from you, or just the question of sharing burdens and organizing. There might be, in your group locally, there might not be a person that has the right graphic design or audio editing or such or access to these documents, but there might be someone who lives 2 hours away, or there might be someone who lives on the other side of the planet that's able to help out with that. So yes, I mean it's for Bundist stuff, it's absolutely crucial. In Europe, there's the other additional factor that you do that the communities are much smaller, and so if you had various groups that are doing their own things locally, it'll be much less difficult to notice than if you have Jewish socialists from all of Europe. Or even just closer in Europe, travel to a single event on a day and meet together and convene. As for Krakow, I mentioned already a few different points, so I'll expand on them. But here I have to say this is something that we've tackled yet before, and these are mainly at this point just ideas, right? So when it comes to Kazimierz, the Jewish quarter, it's an amazing asset and value of culture and heritage and history and infrastructure towards the Jewish community. However, there are systemic issues that are damaging for everyone in Kazimierz, in the Jewish quarter, and that includes over 95% of the population that is there, or 99% of the population that is not Jewish. Although the question about who is Jewish and who isn't has is a very sort of complicated question. There are many, many more people who have Jewish background or ancestry who do not identify as Jewish or are not involved in the community, and the reasons for that as well are often down to various socio societal, cultural, economic factors. But yeah, when it comes to Kazimierz, I mean the Kazimierz, or I keep on saying Kazimierz in English, in Polish we say Kazimierz. It's one of those words that has different intonation depending on the language. For decades after World War II, Kazimierz was known as a quite abandoned part of Krakow, poor, for reasons that the Jewish community there was destroyed and was not able to rebuild by the governments after the war. And it was only after the end of dictatorship in Poland that Kazimierz was able to open to the outside world, and Poland was able to open to tourism. Now, this had its advantages and disadvantages, right? Kazimierz has over tourism, suffers from over tourism. Other areas in Krakow as well. But if you look specifically at things that impact the possibility of living in Kazimierz, you have things like Airbnbs. I had a friend of mine lived on in a building where 90% of the apartments were short-term tourist rentals. You can't have a community in such an environment like that. You don't know the people around you. You constantly see new people around. Of course, people treat apartments in different way than they do their own buildings. That impacts the services that are available locally. There are other things, the gastronomical sector. Those are the only real main industries that exist. In the case of my friend, there was the night hours, silence on after certain hours, completely ignored, right? If it's very difficult to live in a place when you constantly have, English drunk tourists on the ground floor, right? Access, there's other things regarding car culture, for example, right? There's one particularly bad street called Daivur, which has three parking lots on the same street, two of them in abandoned. Or maybe even three of them in abandoned, in empty building lots, right? There are very few green areas. Apart from the boulevards that are quite distant away from the Jewish area of Kazimierz, they're very little. There's one place that's basically considered a hobo area that people don't like to go through, and some abandoned grass next to the old synagogue. And when it comes to cars as well, historically, the Jewish communal spaces for meeting up people was not necessarily the synagogue as such. Of course, Jews did meet at the synagogue, especially religious Jews. But in interwar Poland, or Poland in the early 20th century, the expression for what was happening on the Jew in the Jewish community was what's happening off the Yiddish gas on the Jewish street. The Jewish street was sort of con understood to be the Jewish community, right? The Bund used a slogan called "In die Gassen zu die Massen," in the streets to the masses, right? So when but when the street looks like Szeroka, right, which is the broad street literally, and considered like the center of Jewish life in Krakow, right? Full with cars in the middle, with easy driving access into it, and then mainly tourist trap Jewish quote unquote restaurants for tourists. This isn't a space where communal life of any kind can thrive, and this includes, the non-Jewish vast majority of residents in Kazimierz, as well as the Jewish community in a disproportionate way. This is bad for non-Jews, and it's catastrophic or very, very bad for Jews disproportionately. And so I think there is an important reason act, to have a non-separatist, not you can't tackle these things on your own. Or isolate yourself from the outside world, but an autonomous, a Jewish, effort to organize workers, Jewish workers, Jewish tenants, and just people from within the community that have that think that this is important. Kazimierz suffers from both not enough houses and empty, abandoned housing stock. Right? There are just huge buildings that are lying empty, right? It's just a waste, right? So you can there is stuff that can be done here, and this is all stuff that nobody is talking about in the Jewish community, right? Nobody's talking about this, and in fact, when you look at the quote unquote official religious Jewish communal organization, it sits on a very large amount of housing stock. I don't want to go into like the whole history of it, but the Jewish religious congregation in Krakow is unrepresentative, engaged in shady business dealings, is very bad for the majority of Jewish life in Krakow. Most Jews don't go there or participate in it to any significant extent. And there are other things that I could talk about, but areas such as housing, workplaces, green areas, access to public transport. There are specific other areas when it comes to Jewish community you can think about. For example, in Krakow, there is an Eruv, right? There isn't a place where Orthodox Jews are able to carry things on Shabbos, for example. Those are, sort of more niche, but those are also important things. And while the circumstances in Krakow are quite unique, or at least not, I don't know if unique is the right word, but you can engage in Bundist organizing in Krakow in certain specific ways. I think that these can be adapted principles: housing, work, public transport, green areas. These are all things that impact Jewish communities everywhere. I think we need to absolutely stop with this idea that all Jews are like middle class doctor, lawyer, business owners who, who just donate everything they can to Hillel or whatever. It's really isn't that like that. I sometimes, think of like I look at statistics mainly from America about like Jewish wealth and Jewish income, and in some areas it might be considered more disproportionate. Of course, that you have to account for some communities, but also Jews live in much richer areas of the countries disproportionately. You look at New York or Los Angeles or the Bay Area, right? How are the rental markets over there? Having a college degree, university degree, it doesn't shield you from precarious working conditions. Earning well doesn't mean that your workplace has good environments so that you're not working hard or difficult. And so, this area, it's of course, this is a an updated new understanding of what Jewish labor organizing is, or Jewish communal organizing is. But this is something that we need to, if we believe in Deutschkeit, if we believe in Yiddishkeit, if we believe in whether it's socialism or Chaverschaft, these are all things that we need to be talking about. These are all challenges that we need to step up, and we need to say that the methods by which mainstream Jewish communities are organized are not inclusive. They are inadequate for a significant part of the Jewish community, or Jewish communities, and that we need to unite with non-Jewish organizers and activists and groups who share our goals in this way. And this is the positive vision that we have to counter the idea that the center of Jewish life is thousands of miles away, which is apparently supposed to be, on one hand, a precarious snowflake that is surrounded by enemies on all sides and under constant attack, that we need to constantly rush to its defense and performatively manifest that wherever we can. And on the other hand, it's supposed to be the bulwark of Judaism and Jewish pride, that in the diaspora we are never safe, and that only when we have a nuclear power that suppresses under its boot any whether it be any terrorist or civilian or whatever else, that we the that that is what guarantees our safety. And I think we need to, it's about time that we go out of the of just talking about this in terms of slogans, and we actually get down to practical stuff. Because it's slogans are quite common, and also when it comes to talking about positive vision, with Free Palestine is not a positive vision as such. From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, is not a positive vision. It's a slogan, right? It's something that can encapsulate a positive vision, or at least be the starting point for somewhere. But we need to be more concrete. We need to see, safety through solidarity, right? That's a slogan, right? Palestinian and Jewish liberation are intertwined. That's a slogan, right? We need to be on the ground. We need to be going out to people. We need to have our own spaces that people can come in and see ourselves. We need to be open, and we need to believe that we can convince the majority of the general population when it comes to certain things, or when it comes to like human things. And we need to believe that we can convince the majority of the Jewish community to our rights, right? Towards our vision. The Bund succeeded in that in a certain way. In 1938, in the municipal elections to the Warsaw City Council, for example, the Bund won 17 out of the 20 seats that were won by Jewish candidates, right? The Jewish communal elections of 1936, the Bund went from a position of boycotting them because they found the institutions were bad, towards actually standing and winning, or not being the outright majority, but succeeding in making its position visible, such.
So before we wrap up, I just wanted to ask, was there anything that we didn't get to in this conversation that you wanted to add or that you felt like was important to say?
I had an interview recently and they asked the same question, and I feel like I talk so much that I get through most of what I want to say anyway, but then somehow I find something more to say. I'll need to think a bit more, I guess.
If the answer is no, that's also okay.
Yeah, no, I just these are the main areas we need for organizing for what we're doing in Krakow, and now I've moved to Vienna, I'm also involved here in various things. We need a positive vision. We need people to get interested in us. We need to believe that we can win, right? This is why cynicism can be so dangerous, right? If we don't believe that we can succeed in do in winning, whatever winning might be. Winning doesn't mean like, utopia. Winning means, small vi victories can inspire larger victories, right? If we can't believe that we can positively impact the world, and that this is all just like activism is just like one big coping mechanism, then like if we're miserable, then why do people want to become miserable? This is like also what you say about like people that say being Jewish is like just fighting anti-Semitism. Like, why would someone want to be Jewish if they have a choice to be or not be, right? If it's just going to be miserable, it's not you have something you want to say that you want to do, and there's that communal aspect to it, which I think to a certain extent also comes from us being a much more alienated society. Which comes from, suburbanization, car culture, lack of public transport, cities, urban sprawl. It's ironic because we have ways of connecting that are stronger than ever possibly imagined, and at the same time, we're all more separated than we used to be in physical ways. To speak sort of generally, but we need to be interesting to people. We need to believe that we can have a positive impact on the world, and we need to know what that positive impact is. Don't insult people who might be your potential allies tomorrow, or are just doing not as much as you think is worth. Okay. Reframed. Don't insult people that are like not there yet, or not. There are people that are doing on the ground work. Israelis who are doing amazing on the ground work in Israel Palestine that are doing much more than the perfor like performative anti-Zionist fuck Israel, fuck everything connected to that on like an American college campus. Right. You also and actively in some way, I think, counterproductive because it helps prop up that straw man, and generate dislike towards what you're doing. I don't want to, there are a lot of amazing people that do good work, and it's a huge movement. But positive vision, structure, physical space, local and transnational organizing. That's it. I mean, I don't claim to know all the answers, or even the majority of them. But from my experience with people, who have a somewhat similar background to mine, I think that these are some of the ways in which we can work towards building a better world, whether that is as a socialist organization, or Palestine Solidarity Work, or your local tenants union, or your labor union. These are all things that we need to, these are all things that will be worthwhile, and then that can connect with each other.
Zach, thank you so much, and viel Glück in Haverschaft in your work going forward.
Schönen Dank.
Mir sperrt a Freiheit und Grenzen zum Bund, nur erkennbar freien, die Sklaven sind, die von die Reute ist hoch und breit, sie flattert von Zorn, von Blut ist sie reut, a Schwur, a Schwur, auf Leben und Tod. Himmel und Erde werden uns als Herren, ey, das wird sein, die lichtige Sterne, als Schwur von Blut und als Schwur von Tränen, mir schweren, mir schweren. Mir schwören und als Schwur von Tränen, mir schwören, mir schwören, mir schwören.